Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. European countries have been urged to show more solidarity towards people risking their lives to cross the Mediterranean Sea, as the UN Refugee Agency highlighted the large number of children now reaching European shores from northern Africa. The appeal on Tuesday from UNHCR comes as it continued to help 1,500 people disembark a rescue ship at the Sicilian port of Trapani. Here's the agency's senior spokesperson in Italy, Carlotta Sami.
Most of the arrivals departed from Libya on board flimsy and seaworthy vessels and made repeated distress calls. UNHCR has been present at disembarkations. We have noticed a high presence of minors, many of whom are unaccompanied. The majority of arrivals originate from Mali and the Sahel, West Africa area, Eritrea and North Africa.
Some 10,400 people have now reached Italy so far this year, Ms. Sami said, before welcoming Italy's decision to keep its borders open to those in need of help during the pandemic. So far in 2021, at least 500 people are known to have died attempting to cross the so-called Central Mediterranean route from North Africa. This preventable loss of life underscores once again the need to re-establish a system for search and rescue operations in the Central Mediterranean coordinated by states, UNHCR said. Ms. Sami added that the Sahel region, where many of those arriving in Italy's ports originated, is home to 5.5 million refugees and internally displaced people, before insisting that solidarity from other European Union member states was urgently needed. To El Salvador now, and an alert from UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet, after the entire constitutional chamber of the Supreme Court was dismissed, along with the country's Attorney General. The development follows UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres' call on Monday for respect of the rule of law and the division of powers. This was needed, he said, to preserve the democratic progress achieved in El Salvador since a peace agreement was signed in 1992, ending more than a decade of civil war. In a statement on Tuesday, Ms. Bachelet noted that the judges had been removed after ruling against COVID-19 measures that had been passed by the Ministry of Health. They should be protected from undue interference and intimidation, she said. The magistrates and the Attorney General were replaced by Congress within hours of their dismissal, according to the Office for the High Commissioner for Human Rights, OHCHR, while Ms. Bachelet warned of an alarming trend towards the concentration of power in El Salvador. Citing the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which El Salvador has ratified, the High Commissioner underscored that judges may be dismissed only on serious grounds of misconduct or incompetence. She also said that it was the obligation of the state to abide by judicial decisions, whether or not they are to their liking. Finally, to South Sudan, where children have gone back to school after more than 14 months away because of COVID-19 restrictions. Welcoming the development, UN Children's Fund UNICEF said that it was a step on the road to normalcy for 2 million youngsters across the country. Mads Oyen, UNICEF's Chief of Field Operations, described it as a moment of joy for humanitarians and children across the country.
Going back to school is more than about learning, especially in a country like South Sudan, where we are also faced with humanitarian emergencies in many parts of the country. Schools are places for children to be safe and to be protected, and also to access some basic services, school feeding and so on.
Despite this good news, the UNICEF official noted that many children had not been able to return to class, the backdrop being a humanitarian situation in South Sudan that remains extremely difficult, with 2 in every 3 children in need of assistance, which is the highest figure since 2018. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Complicated here, folks, at Radio Free Kansas. So welcome to This Can't Be Happening on Tuesday with John Grant. I've got to make a couple announces before we get John on. There's some things happening. Dave Lindorf, who I think is sort of one of the founders of This Can't Be Happening at thiscan'tbehappening.net, has been appearing all over the place here lately. It's funny. On podcasts, by the way. They're not really live radio shows in terms of call-ins. And you can call in, area code 646-716-8652, when we are on the air anytime, usually around noon on every day or 1 o'clock here on in the Central Time on Tuesdays. But he's been on two podcasts, Lindorf has. He's been on Counterpunch Radio, which is at counterpunch.org. Just go to counterpunch.org. He appeared April 30th there on their podcast, which they call Counterpunch Radio. And it's a very interesting interview. I was just listening to parts of it. Check it out. He talks about Mumia and China. It's all around good discussion, about an hour long. And then I just found out today, you know, on Thursday, every Thursday we air Law and Disorder Radio, which comes out of, I think it's WBAI, I'm not sure what, it's a New York community radio station, and it is a regular radio show. It airs on over 100 radio stations across the country. Well, here's Dave Lindorf from This Can't Be Happening appearing on that show, which just aired today. So he literally just got off the air a few hours ago out of New York. So we air it on Thursday. Now, we have a community radio station, KKFI.org, KKFI 90.5 FM, here in Kansas City, next door to me. And Law and Disorder is aired today with Dave Lindorf over the air out of KKFI, Kansas City. So Lindorf is getting all around the place where this can't be happening. And I'm really happy to hear that. And we'll probably see. I don't know why. John, why doesn't Dave just call in 646-716-8652? I mean, you know, we're a live call.
I don't know.
Live call-in show.
Did you get a contact him? Did you contact him?
Well, I mean, I got an email from him about Counterpunch, his appearance on Counterpunch.
Right.
And I, you know, but hell, I don't have to invite Lindorf. You know, he can call it like everyone else. Every code
716-8652.
I noticed we've got a couple callers. If you are Dave Lindorf or if you want to talk, you have to punch one. That gives me a signal to let me know that you want to visit.
Right.
So,
and that's not hard to do. All you need to do is punch one. No.
That's right. That's all you got to do. I can see the numbers on the fucking switchboard here. It's like, so I don't know who they are, but that's okay. But anyhow, yeah, so Lindorf's getting around. That's great. Go ahead. Well,
you mentioned two things. You mentioned Mumia and you mentioned China, and you know, there's no one more ready to discuss either of those topics than Dave Lindorf, of course, who is fluent in Chinese and has spent years working and writing in China, and knows more about the Chinese than any of us. You know, he's. And, of course, he wrote a book on Mumia, the case of Mumia, you know, and raised some very, very important issues, like is it that are appropriate to this day of all the shootings? Is it even conceivable that someone can declare self-defense against a police officer? Is that even imaginable in our criminal justice system that one can declare self-defense against a police officer? This is an important question that's being raised by all the shootings. And, well, that question came out of the Mumia case. In other words, if a police officer is about to kill you and you kill him first, can that be couched as self-defense? Well, according to the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of the Police, absolutely not, you know. And so Dave is weighed into that really, really sticky case. He and Lynn Washington, of course, also on This Can't Be Happening, and have done fine work, you know, raised a lot of stuff, raised the obvious question that the man needs a new trial. He got an absolutely lousy trial, corrupt trial with phony witnesses, you know, that they cranked up and lied. And, you know, it's simply a lousy case. And, of course, here was a black man who I used to work with, you know, as a freelancer. I'd run into him here and I didn't know him. But, you know, he's a journalist, and he happened to be an angry black man. And
all right.
You know, at that time, you weren't allowed to be an angry black man. But now, with all the shootings and, the Chauvin trial and conviction and yada, 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 you know, suddenly black anger is mainstreamed and understandable now a little bit more. So, the Mumia case is... And, of course, meanwhile, he's rotting in a Pennsylvania state prison. You know, I think he had COVID for a while there. He has illnesses.
Yeah.
And the man...
Well, he's old.
The man, he's old, like all of us, he's old. And
he
deserves a new trial, for God's sakes. It was a terrible trial and a shameful trial.
Well, Jesus Christ, that admitted fascist mass murderer in Norway. Who killed all those kids on that island?
75 kids.
That son of a bitch. And planted a huge bomb in a downtown. This guy was a real fucking nut. This is an ego guy.
Yeah, but he's in a white country, and he's a white man, and he does. It's we aren't that Finland or wherever the hell it was. Yeah, Finland, I think. Right. Has a very interesting. Society, but it's a very, what is the word, homogenized or whatever.
Well, my point is he's due to get out in like 25 years.
Of course, right. Yeah.
They may not let him out, but I mean, there is actually an end in sight for this fucker.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mumia and Leonard Peltier, there's no end in sight for these two guys.
No
and
way.
And both of them
because
have one thing
you know
common.
Why? And you mentioned Leonard Peltier, of course, because to let him out, the United States of America, if you will, would have to concede that it participated in genocidal mass murder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know? And it ain't going to do that. It ain't going to do that. It may reform,
well,
but it ain't going to confess.
I've got it out of the cop's mouth, and this is like multiple cops. No, federal, feds.
Right.
You know, the issue is that these both of these individuals have been accused, found guilty of murdering cops.
Right.
No, that's I've heard it right out of their mouths, you know, and they.
Of course. That's all they need
to know. Well, and you know, if you dispute the evidence, I think they're. Well, I don't know the evidentiary trail of Mumia, to be honest with you, that well, but I know Leonard.
Well, a lot of it's phony. A lot of it's phony. There was a streetwalker prostitute, I gather, who. Gave bad testimony. But again, Dave would know the details. I don't know the details. I know the larger scan of the story, And it's outrageous.
Well,
the Philadelphia police system don't come off looking very good. Yet they would keep this man in prison forever in order to save their ugly face. You know, I mean, it's garbage.
And I know Leonard. I know the intricacies of Leonard. Peltier's case.
Sure.
As I said, I discussed this with several state and federal cops.
Right.
FBI and the KBI. And we've argued about it over beers.
This is good.
And it finally got down to about killing the cops. But with Leonard, with Peltier's case, it's even more ludicrous because the evidence doesn't put Leonard Peltier anywhere near the scene of the crime.
He had nothing to do with it. I think it's pretty evident. Yeah.
Canada almost refused to honor the extradition order. It's that bad of a case. But here it came down. Here's what these guys came down with. Again, over beers, talking, you know.
Right.
And they said, "Well, look at this way. He knows who did it. Leonard Peltier knows who did it. They even call him Indian X, X,
right.
as in the letter." Right. And they said he won't say who did it.
Yeah.
Well, there is an overlap
with Mamiya. Mamiya is the same way. You know, Mamiya. It's possible his brother killed the cop, but Mamiya is mom.
When his brother killed?
His brother, again, I'm a little fuzzy on it. I need to revisit it. But his brother and he were both involved on the street with this exchange with the officer. And the officer ended up dead. Mamiya shot the guy or whether his brother shot the guy, Mamiya will not clear that up. Mamiya said, "I'm saying nothing. That's the way it is." And so I guess you can say that's similar with Leonard Peltier. If he, you know, the idea that you know who did it and you won't tell us, so therefore we're going to hold you forever till you die in prison. The reason that they're holding him in prison is their own embarrassment, because if they let him out, you know, they're open for embarrassment and, you know, it'll be evident what happened. And they were not going to allow that, and they're going to insist that he die in prison, and then they'll bury him, you know. It's like, we keep him in prison because we put him in prison. That's the only reason we're keeping him in prison, you know. Hey, this is the way the criminal justice system works, and unfortunately, there's these bad cases.
Well, another similarity in both of the cases of Mumia and Leonard Peltier is that both of these crimes happened in the midst of this really radical upsurge of what some people would call the counterculture.
Right,
in Mumia's case, I think it had something to do with the Black Liberation Movement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Much of it was armed. It followed the Black Panthers, many armed confrontations all across the country. And then MOVE in Philadelphia, which we talked about last week.
Right.
MOVE was, I guess you could say it was an armed confrontational type organization. And AIM, the American Indian Movement, with Peltier.
Of course,
they were not so forwardly armed, but they carried their rifles with them when they went out and demonstrated and stuff. So out there in the Boot Hills, you know, of North and South, the Pine Ridge Reservation, Wounded Knee, and all that stuff.
Right, absolutely.
So, but those are two common things. Both of these cases, and I finally got these cops in the corner. Again, over a beer, because I would dig up evidence and run the evidence time, and they'd be running up at reading the cases. This is 30 years afterwards, you know. And it finally boiled down to this. Okay, Leonard wasn't even near the crime scene. Okay, everybody agrees with that. And that most likely the gun they used was not even the gun that they said used in the scene of the crime. Okay. that was used in evidence against him, and Leonard. So he probably didn't do it, but he knows who did do it. He can tell us, okay?
Right.
But here's another thing. We got into this thing. Are they prisoners of war? You know, we actually got that far in this discussion under international law. And here's what they came up with. And there is some credibility to this.
I think so. Yeah.
The forensic science does not lie. And the two FBI agents that were killed at this ranch, really, it was just sort of a rundown farm property.
Out
in the middle of the open plains, and they had ran out of ammunition. Okay, it had been an extended gunfight.
Right.
And whoever killed these guys, there's absolute forensic proof of this, that one of them was mortally wounded and dying anyhow, And right. The other one had exhausted all the ammunition, and whoever shot through the hands of this one agent holding his hands up as if to surrender or over his buddy who was already mortally wounded. And whoever killed him shot that other guy was trying to surrender. That's the law enforcement judgment of that. And they said even if they were prisoners of war, what kind of army kills all their prisoners of war? That's what
every army in some instances kills prisoners. Listen, all the rules are off when you go to war. And one of the rules is, if you're in a bad situation, you see it in every movie, Oh, look, we got these five prisoners. What do we do with them? It's like what's his name? The famous governor Kerry, not John Kerry, but Bob Kerry, Medal of Honor winner. He ran into trouble when the facts came out about a SEAL mission that he'd been on, in which they encountered a family, and they knew that their secret mission would be uncovered and revealed, and they'd be screwed and dead. So they had to kill the entire family, and they did. And Bob Kerry did it, he has a Medal of Honor. Okay, he's a senator and a governor and, he's girlfriends with Deborah Winger, and all this stuff, the celebrity, But hey, he did that. And it wasn't pretty. And it was immoral. It was a war crime. But hey, life is beautiful, so you want to live. So in that case, they deemed that they had to do this. So it happens all the time. And then people get angry.
Yeah.
And shoot people. This is why wars are no good. This is why we don't want to go to war. This is why we want to de-escalate all these things. But the FBI and our police forces often don't want to de-escalate. They want to escalate them. And they do. And so this shit happened. Shit happens, But of course, when shit happens and it's the cops who do it, well, we ignore it because they're cops and they can do anything they want. But if the other side does it, well, you caused a hangnail on our officer, so we're going to hang your ass. It's like, it's proportional. It's not fair proportional.
Well, maybe, hey, I got a suggestion. It's still This Can't Be Happening Tuesday radio on Radio Kansas, right? But maybe you guys at TCBH, Lynn Washington Jr., you and Dave and the whole crew, Gary Lindorf, the poet, you should change it to This Shit Be Happening.
This shit ain't happening.
This shit be happening, man.
I like it, man. I like it.
I don't think you can do it, but I mean...
Alas, this shit is happening.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, this put shit in there. This shit be happening. That's what I would do.
We try to keep the bar high. We try to keep the bar. Often we fail. I fail all the time.
Well, you're in Kansas, man.
And now you encourage me, of course. That's the other thing, yeah.
I do it.
I get into Kansas airspace and I'm in trouble,
Yeah, I know. That's right. Once again, we are live. We're a real radio show, but listeners.
Absolutely.
646-716-8652. None of those podcasts, Counterpunch Radio or Law and Disorder. I guess Law and Disorder could have a call in. They are actually broadcast out of a real radio station, but we only become a podcast when the music plays and we hang up. That's about it.
That's when it becomes
716-8652. So Lindorf, if you're out there listening, call in because suddenly John Grant suddenly Philadelphia has turned into the fucking center of the universe. I mean,
well, you keep saying that. You know, I guess to me it already is the center of the universe because I live here.
Can't believe it. Now, besides a fucking cracked Liberty Bell and a bunch
of
cracked people.
That. Yeah.
I mean, look.
All the crack liver and all the people on crack too. You know, come on.
Crack. I'm telling you, man. I was sitting here. Now, listen, listeners. I know some of you got you knuckleheads out here in Kansas.
Yeah.
Watch PBS. You know, that's Channel 11 and Channel 19 up here in Northeast Kansas. 19 out of Kansas City and 11 out of Topeka. You look Kansas listeners, you know, there's an extended series on PBS about, I think it's called DA, and it's about the Philadelphia district attorney. He says his name's Krasner, right?
Yeah.
Krasner? Is that his name?
I'm having a brain fart here. I can't think of his first name. Larry Krasner, yeah. Yeah, I've met
Larry
him, I've met
okay,
him several times.
Okay.
He's a very good friend of mine, and... you know, he's a dapper dresser. He wears fine clothes, and you know, he what's his name? Fast Eddie Rendell. You know, he may become from DA to mayor to governor or something. He definitely has the look of you know, somebody going places. And his drill is to actually release people from prison. Who were there unnecessarily, or they're innocent, or they've served enough time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that's his drill. And of course, certain people hate his guts, but that only seems to drive Larry on further. You know, so yeah, we like Larry Krasner here.
Well, I hope you do, because he's becoming very famous. I mean, on PBS.
Well, good. Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm saying. He has a future, future.
Well, it gets worse than that, Sean. I hate to tell you this. I mean.
Well, hell, break
Lynn
my bubble.
Listen, I was late night. I was, you know, Lynn Washington Jr., who is a contributing writer at thiscan'tbehappening.net, listeners.
Exactly. A good friend of mine. Yeah, yeah.
He appears repeatedly on this series about the DA of Philadelphia. Glenn Watson Jr. appears. So we got Dave Lindorf on Counterpunch Radio out in California, which is a podcast, not really a radio show. Okay.
Right.
And then we got him appearing at WBAI, I think it's the radio station, in Law and Disorder radio program, which goes out to over 100 stations around the country, including Radio Free Kansas on Thursday.
Right.
So we've got all this shit swirling around. Then we've got the mayor of Easton on HBO,
right.
A series about a detective murder mystery taking place.
Right.
It sounds like just south of you, about 10 miles in another.
Well, yeah,
part
it's
of the suburb.
Yeah. In fact, I'm writing a piece on comparing Mayor of Easttown in 2021 with Dirty Harry in 1971 as police dramas, and it's very telling. You consider the times and the police dramas, you know. So Mayor of Easttown is an excellent 7-part series. They've completed 3. With Kate Winslet as mayor, that's her name. She's a detective in a township called Easttown. There is an Easttown township in Chester County. They've put their fictional Easttown township in Delaware County, which is next door, directly west of Philadelphia, working class county. And she is plagued with all sorts of life dramas, a divorce, you know, a son who committed suicide, a daughter who's in drug rehab, and she's fighting with her daughter over the daughter's son, her grandson, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One thing leads to another, you know, and she's plagued. And, of course, her father was a detective, so she's following her father into this field. It's very, very, very good. It's complex. It's gray, morally gray. And you compare it to 1971's Dirty Harry, and, you know, Dirty Harry is a simplistic cartoon. You know, Dirty Harry comes when we are suffering, if you will, politically from liberal exhaustion. In other words, the liberalism is, it's not solving all our problems. Crime is going up. And all of a sudden, this, you know, reactionary right-wing stuff starts seeping in. And it, you know, in 1971, you get Dirty Harry in that opening scene, which is as racist as anything out of Birth of a Nation, where he's got the guy on the ground and, you know, he's going to shoot him. And, well, how many shots did I fire? Five or six? You feeling lucky, punk? You know? And the guy says, this very black actor, very black features, looks up and says, I got to know, you know, his step and fetch it language. And then Clistone Eastwood goes, click, you know, it's a great scene, but it's pretty racist. Anyway, here we go. And, they, and, of course, these right-wingers pick the most liberal city, which, pardon the expression, is run by queers and liberals, right? And Dirty Harry comes in to correct the scene, you know? It's like Rambo won Vietnam, Dirty Harry wins the crime battle, you know, against the liberals. And so out of that, you get the 75 direct mail, think tanks, et cetera, the right-wing ascendancy. It goes right up and leads directly, you know, like an incline up a roller coaster to Ronald Reagan, or not to Donald Trump at the very top. And that is, to me, the equivalent condition of conservative exhaustion. In other words, you guys have run out of fucking gas. You know, this is the best you can do, a clown, criminal, gangster, president, in order to hold on to all this conservative stuff. Well, there's a certain reaction, exhaustion to that. It's like, no, no, life is more complicated. It's not so crazy, and violence doesn't solve everything, you know. And so you get dramas like Mayor of Easttown, which is the most human cop you could ever imagine, plagued by all the difficulties of being human, you know, and I think it's brilliant. So, and I think it's very telling.
It's certainly.
Anyway,
yeah.
Enough.
You know what gets me about it? Okay. I just want to add a little bit. What the two episodes I've watched are, you know, what I like about it is that I think people out in Kansas who live in small towns.
Yeah.
Or in suburbs, you know.
Right.
Can relate to it because everybody seems to know everybody.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows everybody's shit, too.
Everybody knows everybody, you know, and as the cop comes in to help her out, and, you know, this theme from the cop from the county comes down, very resentful, and he's always asking, do you know everybody in this town? And she says, oh, lass, yes, I do, Right. Exactly. Right. It is like small town America. Yeah, literally. Yeah,
and I think it's very working class. And I was really impressed with that.
Totally.
It captured that. And so I just think it's amazing that this can't be happening. It's happening. The shit is happening, man.
That's right.
I mean, I tell you, we got Lynn Washington. We got Lynn Washington Jr. on PBS. You know, every week, at least little short. They must have done a long interview with him and chopped it up, talking about Krasner, DA, on DA.
I'll have to check that out. I wasn't aware of it.
I was. It brought me up off my seat. I was in the kitchen actually washing dishes, and I heard it, and I looked around because, you know, Lynn Washington, he's only been on a couple times on Radio Free Kansas. But
well, Lynn's a big deal. Lynn's a professor
at
Temple, where I have my master's degree in journalism. Lynn is a professor there at Temple University.
Yeah, isn't he a professor of journalism?
Yeah, of course, yeah, in the Master's of Journalism program where I have a master's degree, right?
Right. So this shit is happening, listeners. You got
to
check out.
Right, well, you forgot to fill the list. You know, you got Lynn and you got Lindorf on Counterpunch, and you got me on Radio Free Kansas. You forgot to put that.
Well, yeah, well, we're busy with all that. I mean, we're a real call-in show, you know. It's not a podcast. It doesn't become a podcast until the show's over. And 646 646-716-8652 just to stuff it up here, you know what. Because you can call in any time when the show's on the air. And even, you know, listeners, even if I'm running a pre-recorded show like Law and Disorder this coming Thursday, or Weather on Wednesday with Alex Smith and about the latest science on climate change with Alex Smith every Wednesday, you can call in, and people do, and you'll join the green room if you want, and I'll visit with you live, you know, while the show's
absolutely
playing. But we're
encourage people to call in now. I mean, hey, I'd love to talk to you.
I got to show up Counterpunch and WBAI and Law and Disorder. Get Lindorf. Get Lindorf in Washington to come in on Radio Free Kansas. We've been doing this years, haven't we, John? We've been doing this quite a while. I mean,
I lost track.
I know. I have too. I've been downloading some of the shows we've done over the, and I'm going to make a This
like,
Can't Be Happening page on
It's like every
internet
Tuesday.
Right on,
it's Radio Free Kansas for me. I'm
every
Tuesday, 2 o'clock. I hook into Kansas, you know, which is amazing.
I know.
It's been, you know, frankly, if I could say this, it's been amazing for me because it puts my head in the middle of Kansas, you know, and I tell you, it's worthwhile to think like, God Almighty, you know, people actually live out there. You know, usually we fly over at 30,000 feet. You know, God, does people actually live out there?
Right. Well, we got to do a shout out to the local Kansas listeners because I mean, they do in their own way spread the word about Radio Free Kansas. By word of mouth, it's sort of like a restaurant.
And you don't need a mask to call in. Hey, you wear your mask.
No,
or
you don't need a mask
when you call
show,
in.
Yeah.
You don't need to wear a mask.
No. Right. And we've got the YouTuber. You know, we even got that on the edge on the YouTubers. The YouTubers, I get sort of frustrated at times when I see this stuff happening.
Right.
When this shit be happening. When I see it, I'm like, what's going on? I mean, what are they doing? They're stealing my guests. They're stealing my ideas. You know?
That's right. Yeah, the big boys are stealing your shit, man. Yeah, come on. Well, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we use too many nasty words for the mainstream, time. You know, we're just not. We're just not clean enough for the big time, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you what. I did that for the first 1,000 shows, but we're approaching 3,500 shows.
Oh,
the first
Lord.
1,000 shows, I wouldn't let any of my young anarchist guests use any the F word. That was the big
thing. Right.
I compromised. You could say shit, you know, damn, all that stuff. But you can't say the F word. Well, I don't even go by that anymore. That went out the window with the first 1,000.
I'm aware of that. Yeah, it's like George Carlin's seven words are all fair game here, you know.
Yeah, well, like I said, the first 1,000 shows I gave up because I just said fuck it, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, I ran into trouble with a Vets for Peace person. They, you know, on the Newseum in, I guess, Arlington, Virginia, outside Washington, the news museum. They unfurled a humongous banner and it had the word, like in 20-foot letters, fuck, right? And I forgot, you know, it was like, you know, war is not obscene, but this 20-foot long fuck is obscene? You know, wait, that was the point, you know, I mean, war, no. And I said, you know, Barack, the guy who did it, I said, look. You know, I said, I use the word too much. You know, granted, my wife says that. I use it too much as a punctuation. But, you know, really, you know, this is not appropriate. You know, it doesn't solve any problem. You know, I was against it. In fact, to counteract it, I put in ever larger type every filthy word I could think of in the email, you know, and ended up with, well, I won't even say the word, but You know, and I was like, John, that's outrageous. Well, I guess that's the point, you know. I mean, do we need to use these words just to use these words or you know. So it's I go back and forth. You know, I go back and forth.
Sure, of course, right.
Yeah, right.
Well, and I got to tell you, I still got to rise. YouTube is it's a wonderful thing if you know how to use it.
Right, right.
I was there on my Facebook page. I think some of you are RFK listeners. You go to my Facebook page. I know you do. I had three live streams, one from Paris, Berlin, and London, all at the same time, running anywhere from 2 to 6 hours each.
Wow.
Of the May Day protest. And one of my favorite signs was in Paris at the May Day International Workers' Day. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was a parade protest, a big shout-out. I don't know what you call
Probably
it.
Probably an annual parade.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And one of the signs was in French in Crayola on a piece of cardboard on the streets of Paris. It said, Viva le fuck.
Well, that's the French for you, you know. Viva la différence. So let's get right down to it, you know.
I mean, they're in France. I mean, you could go do one in France. But, I mean, I was just like, oh, my God. So it was you can go to and check it out on YouTube. Just do live International Workers' Day, Paris, Berlin, or London. In London, they've had a pretty good outrageous thing about kill the bill. Listen, mm-hmm. It was against it sounds like the Kansas State and Pennsylvania State legislatures, except in England, it's the nation. They're going to pass more laws to empower the police even more and give police and people who, you know, when England isn't going as far as Kansas. Kansas, they're like, if you happen to run over a protester, you're not.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's fine. I don't know. What are they limited to, backing over him three times or four times? I don't know. What is it? Which can you do?
I was like, well, you will not be held criminally responsible if you run over a protester over the Keystone Pipeline or, you know.
Right. That's right.
So
put that
in
your
pipe and smoke it.
Well, you know, I think we should have a competition here. Somehow we should put the Pennsylvania legislature up against the Kansas legislature and really see see who's the worst, who's the top dog here, you know. What do you think? I don't know.
Well, it sounds like
a baseball game would be too clean. It has to be like rugby or something, you know.
It's state legislature. I mean, they actually override a veto. They override vetoes all the time because they're a super majority of crazy conservatives, you know, crazy conservatives. They actually passed this law that it's wrong, John, that 18-year-old kids can't carry a concealed gun. It's wrong. We've got to pass a law to make it okay.
That poor kid, you know, he can't get over his acne, but he should have a .45 automatic, that's for sure. Yeah.
Right, he can't drink alcohol either.
Well, that's good. He can have his gun and he won't be drunk, sure, that's good, yeah, okay. Of course, he wouldn't be drinking illegally, we know that. You know.
Yeah, and I don't know how many Democrats, well, I think two or three, they objected or something like, so they put in a thing, well, you have to get some training. You have to get some training if you're 18.
Well, I got training at 18. It was called basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. You know, I mean, they trained me how to shoot, how to appreciate guns, and, you know, okay, you know, we're going to send you over there and get the gooks, you know, and it's okay. You can shoot anyone you want, you know. And
I just thought of me going up to a 7-Eleven in Leavenworth, Kansas, knowing that this punk over there is standing there with a fucking gun down his pants bothers me. You know what I mean?
Well, here's one for you. I was in El Salvador after the war was over, and things were supposed to be better, but they were ironically worse. I was in a van with about six other people, and this car comes up beside us with two kids in the car. One of them waves a .45 automatic out the window, and in front of the driver's windshield goes bam, 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 and which all startled us all. And then he pulled over to the left, and we pulled over to the right, and there was a standoff, you know. And I remember somebody in the van said, "Oh, it's okay, they're kids." Oh, great. Great, we can get shot up by a kid. That's wonderful. I love it, yeah. And so we got out of that because some guy in a truck behind us had seen what had happened, and he comes up, pulls alongside. He says, "I have a gun on the seat here." He showed it to us. "And so follow me." And so we followed this guy. And we looked at them, you know, and they just sort of grinned as we went by, and they left us alone. But, you know, kids with guns, not good, you know.
Jesus, is that how you got out of it? An older guy with another gun?
Well,
Jesus, that's terrible.
They decided, you know, I think they were intimidating us, a bunch of gringos in a van. And as I say, the war was over. It then evolved into criminality, so you had criminals to deal with all the time, armed criminals, you know. They're probably already psychopathic killers, you know. And these kids were teenagers. Oh, great. That really makes me feel better, you know. And they parked up there. We had this little standoff, and, you know, we're going, "Oh, shit, man, what's going on here? Are they going to nail us and rob us or what?" And this guy comes up and says, "Hey, I saw what happened. Follow me." And we did. I think they realized, well, if they started something, this guy's going to engage. This guy said he was going to protect us. And we got out of there. That, you know, I don't know what would have happened, but we were glad he came along. And it just reminds me, kids with guns, you know, well, they're just children, you know. Oh, great, you know. Yeah. All those children we sent to Vietnam, you know. Oh, yeah, kids with guns, man. Not good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that's about the low water mark of lawmaking in Kansas, if you ask me.
That, and you know, think of what happened in Charlottesville where they run over that woman. I'm going like, are you kidding me? You're telling us now that that's legal?
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
well,
really? Is this really happening? I mean, this can't be happening, you know, but it is. And as we say, this shit is happening, you know.
That's the low mark of the Kansas legislature. Do you, off the top of your head, come up with anything from Pennsylvania?
Well, we have not. Our esteemed legislature has not come up with that. I will give them credit for that, you know. I think you guys may be winning in that case, you know. We'll run you a good race, though, I tell you. Let's see, what have we done lately here?
I know. That's why I'm saying, you know, all these TV shows and all these famous appearances. Oh. I mean, damn, you know.
Oh, the reaction here, I think, is sort of rumbling, because, like, especially in our township, my wife is part of a group of mostly women. I connect them to, like, Women in Black in Argentina and things like that are taking on the police here, who have a history of racial profiling. We know it. It's a no-brainer. And so these women in this group called CARCI, that's the acronym, I'm doing a story for a local newspaper next to us here in Chestnut Hill on this group of, they have 1,000 people on Facebook. I mean, I couldn't get anything going with Coffee with a Cop and any efforts I had. But one thing I'm finding is dealing with these cops, which are very protective and very secretive, that women do have a leg up, just like women in black and say, Argentina in the Dirty War. Because when men are critical of the police department, they get into this tough guy, macho, I'm tougher than you, I'll kick your ass kind of thing. You're a faggot and all this kind of stuff, you know. I've dealt with it. I know that this is the way cops, they are always thinking about controlling and getting it, you know, being able to control the people that they have to deal with. That's their job, is to control people, capture them, bring them into the criminal justice system. So when they are opposed by a male, they go into tough guy mode. Hey, I'll kick your fucking ass. I'm a cop. I always am right, and I will go physical if I have to. Whereas they can't take that posture with women. You know what I mean? It's a dynamic that I haven't quite got a handle on, but it's, I think there's something to it, you know? Anyway, that's just
that's what you get. I think, I hate to sound snobbish when it comes to
Well, please do.
Piggery.
Don't restrain yourself, Mike. Go ahead.
It sounds to me like you haven't got beyond the beat patrol. You know, the beat officer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get into some of these plainclothes detectives, you'll find some real smart ones. I mean, like,
well, detectives tend to be another animal. Yeah, they're not so
right.
macho and so delicate
As a matter of fact, right. As a matter of fact, some of the more intelligent ones I ran into would do things like get on my ass big time about having a .44 special.
Uh-huh.
And
you and Clint Eastwood
right, that's exactly, they said, who the fuck do you think you are, Clint Eastwood? And
my God,
like,
you got this long leg cannon motherfucker. Well, I didn't
see him. No, it was a five shot revolver, .44 special, big slug.
You mean a .44 magnum or a .44 special? What's the difference?
.44 special, that's what they call it.
Okay.
And it's a heavy slug, light load.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah,
you know?
I bet. A lot of powder behind
jacket.
It. Probably. Yeah.
Small jacket. But anyhow, the point was that it would still go through three walls and kill a rhino. That's what a detective with a ballistic finally just said, "Look, you idiot! You know you're going to kill." You might blow the head off somebody, but you'll also probably kill some kid through three walls.
Well, of course,
so
that was, if people would care to watch this wonderful series by Raoul Peck called Exterminate All the Brutes, the third one is about killing at a distance. And it talks about the introduction, I guess, Spanish-American wartime, of the .44-45 automatic, the classic gun that my dad had in the South Pacific and brought home, and I played with as a kid. 45 automatic, you know, and the reason that the 45 automatic was created was because it was such a big bullet with powder behind it that if you had a smaller bullet, you could shoot somebody, but it wouldn't throw them back. You know, they would keep coming at you with their cutlass and machetes and hack you to pieces, you know, even though you got three slugs in the guy. Well, they came up with the 45 automatic to bam, you hit him in the chest, he is going to fall backwards, you know what I mean? And that's the reason for these cannons, you know. That's the reason for Clint Eastwood's long dog leg 44 magnum, you know, cannon. He goes kablam, kablam, you know. Big guns, you know.
Yeah,
big game hunters, you know,
That's the other thing. They said that's an elephant gun, Mike. That's not for
50 caliber elephant gun. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I changed guns. I conceded and got a better one, you know. So had more bullets.
Right. Exactly.
That's how they won me over. Oh, I get 15 shots with this one, and I only have 5 with this one. I see. Okay.
And right, it moves so fast, you can probably get 7 of them into them by the time the first one gives you 1. So,
it's a horrible way.
Welcome to the modern world.
Never,
you know?
Right, and these were the same guys that were trying to explain to me that, you know, like, you know, all right, even by your way of thinking, Mike, that this, these are liberation armies, the black and the red, the Indians and the African Americans. You said even if these are liberation armies, you know, what kind of army shoots their prisoners? You know, that's unarmed prisoners that are surrendering.
These are not, as I said, every army.
These are not. Well, I wasn't man enough to stand up for that and tell them, you know.
Well,
so I just
of course
sat
it's
back
not
with
official. Of course it's not official. I mean, you know, we go out of our way. Go ahead. Yeah.
Right, I just sat back and said, well, you're buying the beer, so I'll keep my mouth shut.
There you go. Well, there are times when you do have to be diplomatic, and I think there is a value to that. especially to
you're
save your sorry little ass, you know, if that's an issue.
Right. I do remember one time we were, and we always had to, we went to the same place, years. We did this for years. Not every week, not every, but, you know, it was a major thing. And I pulled out the place is famous for their tortilla. Well, I don't know what they call them. They're like Doritos. Uh-huh. Taco shells. They hand out instead of popcorn and peanuts, they'll put out these chips, you know, that they make.
Yeah,
I got you.
Sure.
And these guys are drinking, and nobody's got any money, even though they get paid like $90,000 a year, you know. They're not going, well, we'll get an appetizer, you know. Yeah, okay, we'll get an appetizer. Yeah. And what we got all these free chips, endless free chips, so we'll eat this and drink beer and talk, okay? All right, sure. But one day I got fed up listening to him tell me, you know, what the right way to be is to be a detective and what's safe
right.
and what's not
of
safe.
Of course.
And what are prisoners of war, you know, versus prisoners, you know, all this shit I had to listen to, which was good.
Well, also, you're if I'm correct, you're a private dick, aren't you? You're a private detective at this time, of course.
Yeah, at that time I was a private detective.
So you have something in the game here, you know.
Yeah. So I was sitting there after a while. I got fed up one day, so I just picked up one of these deep-fried chips. And they're eating them, you know. At the end of work, they're hungry, you know. Blah blah blah.
Right,
they're having their dips and all their shit. They're at all this shit, you know. And I picked these up and took my Bic lighter out and lit one up, and it went up like a goddamn blowtorch. You know?
You're kidding.
You must
lots of
about,
oil in those
no,
babies,
right,
I
no.
guess. Yeah, right. Yeah.
What you might think about what you're eating, boys. You know, you'll all be dead by 60.
This stuff is flammable.
So,
well, here's one for
you.
Here's one for you about cops. All this stuff I'm dealing with cops. I decided, I need to write a memoir. I'm in a memoir mode. I'm an old man. You know, you start thinking about in the past and when you're a kid. You can't remember what you did 5 minutes ago, but you remember what you did 50 years ago, you know.
Exactly.
So anyway, so I wrote this piece, and it turned out in 2 days I wrote it. I just gushed it. It's 10,000 words plus, and it's called My Life with Cops. And I just a little introduction, and then I say what I'm going to do is try to remember every interaction incident I ever had with police, and I. You know, went on for 10,000 words, and one of it is particularly embarrassing. You'll have to read that to find out what that is. A lot of it is just petty, stupid stuff. You know, in which of course I ended up on the short end of the stick. So I think it's an exercise a lot of people should do. It'd be interesting. Where cops are in the air and all this. And cops, and of course race. I put race in to because that's the issue now: black and blue cops and race. My view of the police, or is it accumulation of all the interactions and propagandas? My mother telling me literally that the policeman is your friend. plus some other racist things my mother told me, along with mother's milk that I soaked up. You know, so you begin to realize how and why you feel the way you do about police because of the interactions you've had, you know. And it was very instructive for me. And as I say, it just poured out of me, you know. So
it sounds like it. Well, let us know.
It's too long for this.
Yeah,
can't be happening. I'm sending it to the Baffler for one, you know.
Excellent, excellent.
You know the Baffler, right? Yeah.
Oh yeah, Thomas Frank started the Baffler.
Absolutely. See you, Mike.